It's possible there are some Alaskans who question just how much it improves your quality of life to be splashing around in the slush on a bicycle instead of riding in your car. Good morning and welcome to Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Anchorage may soon have a bicycle plan. What would that mean? Your call's welcome at 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk at aprn.org. Transportation and the quality of life is the subject today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
It turns out that this evening, actually, the Anchorage Assembly is going to have a public hearing on this new bicycle plan. And that seemed a really good time to take up once again the issue of transportation and quality of life on Talk of Alaska. But we're not just going to talk about Anchorage, but we do have this new bicycle plan, which could be of interest to other communities. And to talk about it, I have by telephone the president of Bicycle Commuters of Anchorage, Brian Lippmans. Hello, Brian. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me on the show, Steve.
Well, Brian, how long has your organization been in existence?
We came together in the spring of 2008, so we're coming up on our second anniversary.
And obviously you must be a bicycle commuter yourself.
I am. I've been traveling by bike for several years now.
And just how gnarly are you? How bad does it have to get before you resort to alternative measures to get back and forth to work?
Well, the only things that really keep me from getting to work are snow days when there's just too much snow, or when it gets really cold, and really cold is below negative 20 for me. But we can look to Fairbanks and see that they're raising the standard for cold temperature riding.
Yeah, as a winter commuter myself, I was quite surprised at how little gear I actually needed compared to what I thought I would need. And I guess mostly because, you know, you're burning some calories and you're generating some heat inside of your shells. So you just basically want to kind of layer it and protect your little extremities.
I think that's right. I wear casual clothes and then just put some rain pants over my regular pants if it's nasty out, and have a fleece and a jacket and some gloves. So you don't really need special equipment to get on your bike in the wintertime.
Brian, let me ask you this. How close have you come to having a collision with another bicyclist? Because it appears to me that we are getting a great deal of increased traffic in the last year or two.
In the summertime, we definitely see a lot more bicyclists on the green belts. And I use Chester Creek Trail to get to work, and sometimes you'll see there'll be three bikes across on the trail, and that can get a little tight. And so you have to keep a heads up on the really nice days when everyone's out there.
Yeah, and so you sort of dodged my question. I've had a couple of close calls already because it's quite different from a vehicle, a bicycle. The type of control is different, and two of them can't often quite figure out what each trying to figure out what the other one's likely to do. You know, it's very helpful when somebody actually says which side they're going to pass you on, for instance.
Right. It's difficult to know exactly what the rules are on multi-use paths like that. Sometimes you have bicyclists who are, they might have headphones in, so it's difficult to communicate with them. But for the most part, I still think it's a safe place to be, and you might get a couple close encounters with other bicyclists over the summer, but not too many.
I have noticed, you know, as a user, I've noticed that there seems to be an increasing harmony. I might have expected with more bicycles on the road that there might have been more resentment developing from motor vehicle people who just find bicycles on the road and frequently, you know, you just get nervous that they're, you know, that gets concerned about the safety of the bicyclists. But what I'm finding instead is that the coexistence is actually getting better. In other words, it would appear that the motor vehicle people and the bicyclists are kind of getting more and more familiar with one another, kind of getting over towards the European model. Is that your experience too?
I think it is my experience, and the experiences that I've heard from other bicyclists is that motorists are becoming much more courteous in this city. We'll often hear tales of a motorist who has no interest in sharing the road with a bicyclist. But what we don't hear is all of the times that a motorist waves a bicyclist on or gives them plenty of space when they're passing or doesn't speed up right next to them. And overall, the motorists are seeing that bicyclists are on the road, that it doesn't really impede their travel in any significant manner. They understand that bicyclists have a right to be on the road. So I think motorists are slowly learning as well that bicyclists are out there and it's not a problem, and in fact it's a benefit to them. And we've seen this in cities across the United States that slowly but surely motorists realize that bicycle transportation means one less car, which means less traffic congestion for them, and that if you provide bicycle infrastructure so that there can be travel lanes for bicyclists, then you start to increase the number of bicyclists on the road, which means even less cars, and you create this virtuous cycle. And so that's one reason why the Anchorage Bike Plan, which is up tonight before the Assembly, is such a good thing for Anchorage.
Yes, we're speaking with Brian Lipmans. He's president of the Bicycle Commuters of Anchorage. We have some calls already. The telephone number 1-800-478-8255. A question I would like to put out to the listeners, I'd like to hear from people who drive motor vehicles and who have problems with bicycles or don't have problems with bicycles or have observations on this issue, and their calls. A local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. I'd also like to hear from people, and I hear this a lot personally, people who have good intentions, people who might, if transit was more frequent, might take the bus more, people who would like to see commuter rail so they didn't have to drive the Glen Highway between Anchorage and the Amatsu Valley, and people who are maybe just very, very close to becoming bicycle commuters, maybe just in the summertime, or whatever, and what they might see are the hurdles or the borderline. So, because I'm thinking, Brian, that we may be getting close to a tipping point. There may be a great many people actually who, if it's just made a little bit easier for them, would make that choice. And you actually, in the bicycle plan, have some goals along those lines, I understand.
Well, the bike plan sets out a goal of doubling bicycle ridership. And the bike plan is a 20-year plan, so over those 20 years. And what we've seen elsewhere in the United States is when you start putting bicycle infrastructure into a city and provide a safe place for bicyclists to travel, where they don't feel threatened, where they feel confident to get on their bicycle and go by bike instead of getting in the car, that they meet these goals in a matter of a few years. Rather than 20. So I don't see why that's any different, should be any different for Anchorage. I think we'll see significant increase in bicycle ridership once we start implementing the bicycle plan.
Now, one thing that you talk about quite a bit is safety, because it turns out that there are certain patterns to collisions between bicycles and motor vehicles, and that there are some things in terms of getting more predictability that probably can address the most frequent causes of accidents. And maybe you could just talk a little bit about that, and especially the issue of whether or not bicycles ought to be on the sidewalk.
Sure. Well, one of the things that gave rise to the Anchorage Bicycle Plan is that it's, in fact, more dangerous to travel on sidewalks than it is to be out on the road, and the major reason is that when you're out on the road, you're more visible and your behavior is more predictable for motorists. So the bicycle plan, following what other cities have done by putting bike lanes in and other bike infrastructure, you provide a safe place for bicyclists to travel. Being on a sidewalk is really dangerous because you're interacting with cars when they're not really expecting you or looking for you. So you may be traveling down the sidewalk, and the motorist is just looking, just trying to yield onto another road, and isn't looking for bicyclists, and you get a variety of bike-car collisions. I think you're 20 times more likely to get hit while riding on a sidewalk than you are if you're in a bike lane.
Oh, that hurts.
So that's the reason why we're pushing for the bicycle plans. It provides much more safety for bicyclists.
So the idea is to actually have bike lanes. When there's enough pavement for it, just go ahead and have a bike lane instead of putting the bikes on the sidewalks where you can even have people walking.
That's right. Put bicycle lanes in where the roads are wide enough, and continue to use the separated pathways, but making sure that where we have separated pathways, these would be the multi-use paths, and we have several of them throughout the city, but many of them, like the one on Lake Otis, are incredibly dangerous because there's so many roads or driveways or alleys that are emptying out into Lake Otis. And you only have this multi-use path on one side of the road. And so if you're traveling south on Lake Otis, a motorist that's coming out from a driveway and yielding on to Lake Otis and heading north is not going to be looking to the right to see if you're coming. And that's where we see a lot of collisions. So these multi-use paths that have a lot of side cuts through them are a dangerous place to be. So when we're designing separated bike paths or separated multi-use pathways, we need to be sure that we're designing them where there's not a lot of cut-throughs and making sure that they're at least 5 to 7 feet away from the road so that there's a safe space and also a green space between the road and the path where you can deal with snow storage and other issues.
All right, let's broaden it out to statewide at this point and go to Mike, joins the program from Kodiak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Mike.
Hey, thanks, and thanks for these guys that are working for this plan in Anchorage. I've got a couple of comments. First, a lot of people don't realize that the League of American Wheelmen were the first people in the United States to lobby for paved roads, and they were doing that before cars were invented, before automobiles were on the road.
Amazing.
And back then, the bicyclists wanted the paved roads. The people in horse and buggy were not so keen on paved roads. So if you want to talk about rights to the road, actually bicyclists have a longer history on roads than cars do.
Thanks, Mike.
And I have this graph from Scientific American in March of 1973, and this guy analyzed every form of transportation on the planet, even in the animal kingdom. So the rating is calorie expended to move a kilogram 1 kilometer, and of all the methods of transportation, including a salmon, including a human walking, including a bumblebee, including a man in a jet fighter, the absolute most efficient form of transportation on the planet is a human on a bicycle. And a book just came out last year by David Byrne of Talking Heads. And he's been a bicycle commuter for years. And so he's got all these impressions of around the world. But one thing I didn't realize before I saw the book was that bicycles are absolutely, bar none, the most used form of transportation for humanity. More people are riding bicycles than any other form of transportation. And America has to incorporate this. And you look at cities that are doing a good job. New York's starting a new plan that seems to be well received. And I've been down in Tucson. Tucson has real bike lanes. So if a car is turning, a car is going to the right of the bicyclist. The bicyclists are kept in traffic. And that's the way it should be, because a bicycle is a motor vehicle. It's not some recreation. It's actual motor vehicle. You're not allowed to use bicycles in wilderness areas because they are a motor vehicle.
And, Mike, here, you're a goldmine of information. I want to zip this one back around to Brian. What about this idea of, you know, when you have the cars wanting to make a right turn, maybe it's not so good to have the bike lane right next to the curb?
That's become a problem in some cities, and the planners are finding that if you queue up the bicyclists in front of the cars in the intersection in what are referred to as bike boxes, so the bike lane comes up to the intersection, and then there's a box to the basically right in front of the motorist's travel lane. So the bicyclist can queue up there and then proceed through the intersection when the light's green. They get out in front of the cars before those cars are taking a right. And the other example is the one that Mike referred to, where you bring the bicycle lane basically over, you merge it over, and so the cars are going right without the bicyclists to the right of them, and the bicyclists can proceed straight. So it's a designing issue, but the solutions are out there, and between actual infrastructure on the pavement and signage, you can also have bike lights integrate into the light system, signal system, to allow bicycles.
It's also a movement issue.
Yeah, obviously.
Because you want to keep the traffic moving.
Yeah. All right, Mike, I want to thank you for that.
Oh, thank you, guys. See you.
Mike from Kodiak. It's Talk of Alaska. The telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. One more bike question before we go to buses. Lisa in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Oh, thank you, you guys. Great to hear this stuff going on. Brian, you got a vision. I hope it infects all of us. My dad told me a quick story about how he biked from the Bronx all the way out to the end of Long Island and back, and it took 3 days, and he got back, and my grandma goes, oh, so you're back. So I'm all for that biking, and I noticed on C Street there, all last summer, I tried to quit with the gas and get on the pedal, and that was a big obstacle.
That's like one of the worst places in town, right, Brian?
It's dangerous. Anytime you have a lot of intersections, it's going to be a challenge for bicyclists. C Street includes bike lanes.
Well, it wasn't so much the intersections on C Street as the lack of proper lanes and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
because you got trucks and it's a big stretch from 15th to Fireweed, where it's just.
Yeah, rough. You got to get across Chester Creek, and I think every bicyclist that. It wants to go back and forth between Midtown and Downtown has a bit of a route problem.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And geez, I hope we can figure out something for that. And Brian, keep
yeah.
up your good
well,
work.
Well, I think what they intended, Lisa, was for you to take A Street and do that goofy bridge thing.
Yeah,
but it just curves around too much.
Sometimes I don't want to go underneath there, and it's not.
Yeah, no, I think it just doesn't work. It's kind of nice for recreational biking, but for commuting, it just plain sucks, basically.
And one more quick comment. You were talking about future transportation infrastructure, and I just want to put my 2 cents in that we really do need some sort of commuter rail link from Anchorage to the Valley. I just don't know why these bureaucrats aren't seeing the vision like the rest of us.
That's a very good question, and sometimes these things take more persistence than you could possibly imagine. I know as time has gone on, there's been quite a bit of investment in the existing rail corridor through the military bases and getting it to where it can support a higher speed traffic, but we still haven't gotten all the way. I think we might not be as far from it as we think we are. Let's turn now. Thank you, Lisa, for your call there from Anchorage. David Levy, maybe it's a good point for you to come in. David is the president, is it? Executive
director.
Of the Alaska Mobility Coalition, and we've had him on the show before. David, we've been talking about the bike plan and the fact that we might be hitting a tipping point where if other cities experiences any example, all you have to do is make it easier, and all of a sudden you have a flood of new bicyclists because they always wanted to. They just needed the encouragement. I wonder if it's the same thing with the transit.
Well, thanks, Steve. I think we're seeing that statewide, that people are looking at alternative ways to commute. And that's something that the AMC is kind of promoting as part of our statewide public awareness campaign. But we're seeing all over the state, people are taking buses, they're taking bicycles, they're taking vans, they're using their cars, they're using a multiple modal system to get to work and to school and to medical appointments. And in terms of the discussion about commuter rail, that's been a discussion going on for a long time. And I know in the legislature right now, they're taking the first steps to creating a regional transit authority. They had some public hearings last week to deal with that, to go further on in the process. And while my organization hasn't taken a position on the regional transit authority, we recognize that we need to look at all modes of transportation to get people from the valley into Anchorage. And rail is one of them. It's an expensive investment, but it would be a good investment, I think, for both the valley and Anchorage as that road system gets more and more clogged up on the Glen as people are coming into town for work. It's a really convenient and way to get people between the two communities.
Well, going into your website, you guys ran a survey, mm-hmm. and discovered that transit ranks basically third in the concerns, but what's the first concern is fuel cost.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they kind of all blend together.
And that's kind of the thing that we thought was real interesting is that there is a lot of interest in public transportation. I think, you know, partly it's an environmental concern. And not just in the urban parts of the state, but the rural as well. And part of it is the cost of fuel. People are saying, you know, how can I stretch my dollar out that much more? Well, maybe I don't want to spend $4 to $5 a gallon on fuel. Maybe I want to bike to work or carpool or vanpool or take the bus.
Yeah. I am the subject is transportation and the quality of life. But what your organization made me aware of is we're beyond really quality of life to quality of livelihood sometimes, because you take a place like the Diamond Center, which is also a bit of a center for the transit system in the city of Anchorage, and what is it, like a quarter of the employees use the bus?
Yeah, a quarter of their employees, according to a survey they did several years ago, use public transportation to get to work.
Yeah.
So it is really an economic engine for them, and they couldn't survive if public transportation wasn't available. And you know, we're seeing that throughout the state through, you know, communities in Fairbanks and Juneau and Anchorage and Kenai and Mat-Su. People are using transportation to get to work. And, you know, when a company wants to set up a business, you know, Walmart, for example, in the Valley, they try to coordinate with the transit system to make sure that their employees can get there on a regular basis.
So when last we were talking, I seem to remember we got into the issue of financing some, mm-hmm. and the idea that some of the value that transit provides to people, to the taxpayers, to the property owners, to the business owners, could be captured in some way, shape, or form, we might be on a path to sustainability. So in other words, let's say Walmart knows that a lot of its people don't have cars, people that work there. They need that transit. Well, maybe Walmart ought to be chipping in for that.
Well, and I think in communities around the state, they're doing that. They're working with local businesses to set up bus stops so they're convenient for their riders, and the business will provide either in-kind or cash to make that bus stop available. So there are some innovative ways around the state that they're doing that. I know they're doing that in Southeast, and I've heard of that in the Valley as well.
It's David Levy of the Alaska Mobility Coalition. We're talking about transportation and quality of life, always a fascinating subject on Talk of Alaska, and trying to broaden it to beyond Anchorage, because there is, as we will hear, transit all across the state. There are systems all across the state. Some of them are on the on-call type, but there are a number of different systems, as David will be explaining to us. Let's go now to Tom, who joins the program from Haines. Tom, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you, Steve. It's good to be on the show.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you. What's on your mind?
I own a bicycle business in Haines and Skagway, and we've been operating for 22 years with sales, service, rentals, and tours. And we operate quite a few tours out of Skagway, Alaska, with the cruise ships that come in there. And I've been lobbying DOT for about 15 years for improvements for bikes on the Klondike Highway, but haven't had much success in getting any funding for that. And
do they plow that in the winter now?
Yeah, the road's open year-round.
Uh-huh.
And it was paved in 82, and after that, they really haven't done much to the road except put some chip seal on a couple times. And it doesn't seem like biking's a priority for the Department of Transportation in the state of Alaska. I know we have a bike advocate, Bob Lurie, and he works mostly out of South Central, but we haven't had a lot of success here in Southeast Alaska as far as getting bike lanes on the roads or when having the roads upgraded for bicycles.
Well, at least you put your 2 cents worth in on the radio. It seems like that would be just absolutely spectacular, if maybe kind of a tough climb, but really a spectacular ride.
Actually, we mostly bike down the hill.
Uh-huh.
So it goes down the highway from the top of the White Pass, and they do have a race up the hill that people participate in as well. So it's a both-direction route, but it would be nice to just see bicycles given more of a priority in the state of Alaska for upgrades on the roads rather than money going into, let's say, funding a road from Juneau to Skagway and all the other wasteful spending that's been happening with the Department of Transportation. And I know there's a lot of federal money available for bikes. I'm a member of the Bikes Belong Coalition, and there's also a Bicycle Friendlies community program where communities can get listed as a bicycle-friendly community and also have grant money available through the Bikes Belong Coalition. So there's certainly avenues for bicycle revenue out there. Both Haines and Skagway are great towns to commute in because they're small towns and we can easily get around on bikes. I would just like to see the Department of Transportation work closer with the communities as far as helping them with their bike plans.
Yeah. Tom, well, thanks for calling. Anything more you want to add? Have you gone up to disc brakes on your vehicles?
Actually, disc brakes are okay if you're doing serious downhill riding, but actually V-brakes seem to still work the best as far as you're just stopping your bike. Disc brakes tend to get, if you knock them, the rotors get warped, and then they don't work as well. But, yeah, there's been a lot of upgrades in bikes over the years, especially in the comfort of riding a bicycle and the ease of shifting. And most of the bikes we sell in Haines and Skagway are commuter hybrid bikes, which are your comfort bikes that people can easily get to the post office on, go to the grocery store, and get a little bit of exercise. And that's what cycling is all about, getting out on the bike.
All right, Tom. Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah, I wonder, Brian Lipmans, if you can talk a little bit about this. Secretary LaHood made an unexpected appearance at the Bike Summit and announced a new policy at the Department of Transportation. Have you had a chance to look at that policy and what it might mean? I mean, he seems to be pretty serious about the Obama administration wanting to encourage people to exercise, to encourage the ability to get from home to work by some other means than a motor vehicle and things like that.
That's right. Secretary LaHood, just 2 weeks ago now, set out a new policy for the Department of Transportation that basically says, you know, bicycling and walking are equal modes of transportation with motor vehicles, and that they are going to, the Department of Transportation, Federal Highway Administration, when they're looking at projects, they're going to want to see the projects incorporate safe and convenient walking and bicycling into the project. So this is a significant policy direction that really is addressing how we focus on moving people around rather than how we move people in cars around. And I think that's really the, you know, the concept that Secretary LaHood is working under is how can we create both in the urban setting, but also in the rural setting, how can we make cities and towns and communities more livable? And this is one significant way of doing that.
All right. I want to thank you very much. Brian Lippmans, president of Bicycle Commuters of Anchorage, David Levy of the Alaska Mobility Coalition, our guests as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century, member FDIC, equal housing lender, and by BP, unlocking Alaska's resource potential.
Well, we like to ask you to keep your calls as brief and to the point as possible because we're maxing out the phone lines right now, and we'd like to get as many people heard as possible. This one comes in on the internet at talk@APRN.org. Dawn says, hey, obesity costs the state of Alaska $477 million per year. Thanks for doing a piece on active transportation. Even something as simple as providing a safe route to school has serious health benefits. In 1969, 85% of children living within a mile of school walked or bicycled. In 2001, it's 12%. 36% of Anchorage School District children K-12 are overweight. Overweight children suffer shorter life, high cholesterol, fatty liver, 25% at high risk to develop diabetes, asthma twice as often, medical costs three times higher. Let's go to Jonathan, joins program from Haines. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jonathan.
It's very good to be here, and thanks for doing such a great job for the state over the years.
Well, thank you.
Well, you bet. So I'll try to keep this short, which is something that I rarely do, but...
that's, you know, all right. You have plenty of company there, Jonathan.
Pardon me?
You have plenty of company there.
Oh, good, good. Hey, you know, the problem is the intertie between bike traffic and car traffic. And cars follow the roads, and bikes need even grades for successful mass transit. If you were to raise an artery freeway system that was bike only, you take congestion off the streets, you take the danger of the interplay off the streets, you make a connection to vital places where you can get on the street shorter. It's green jobs. Old people can use it if you have periodic spirals with stairs on the sides for up and down. And in short, you know, big dreams cost the same as little dreams, and they pay better dividends if you think them out and initiate them.
Yeah, well, Brian, I imagine you would kind of like to have some exclusive bike corridors that were at grade.
Well, if we're thinking about the future, we better think about our children in 20 years and their children in 40 years from now. And if we didn't have something like this, well, you know, I mean, let's do something right for the state of Alaska. Anchorage is the population base of the entire state. It's our pool, so to speak. I got there in 84 from the North Shore of Alaska and was immensely impressed, by the bike path through the park system. And yeah, you deserve it, Anchorage, and your children deserve it. If you covered it, say, 5/8, the traffic would warm the upper part of the bubble. You'd keep snow and rain off and wind off, and you'd make it a more pleasant experience to commute. So.
Oh, wow, Jonathan, thank you.
Jeez, man.
A great dream. I'm loving it. Wally Hickel should be listening. Thanks.
If it's the most efficient form of travel, why aren't we investing in it for the future? We got green money to do it. Why isn't Anchorage the forefront leader of something that propels us into the future with jobs and health and transportation?
All right, Jonathan, thank you so much for your call.
Keeping it short. Thanks again.
All right. Brian Lippmann's, to what degree does the bicycle plan look forward to the potential of bicycle corridors that aren't just the multi-use paths that we all know have problems?
Well, this version of the bicycle plan is the first step and doesn't incorporate what some other cities are doing. They're often referred to as a separated bikeway or a cycle track, where you are separating bicyclists from the from cars by placing the bike travel lane next to the curb, and then to the left of the bicycle lane are parked cars, and then you have your moving traffic. And this is something cities including New York and Portland are experimenting with and are finding excellent success, because it does create a great sense of comfort and safety for the bicyclist.
So it sounds to me like the bicycle commuters of Anchorage have no intention of collapsing in an exhausted heap once the assembly passes the bike plan. You guys are just getting started.
Well, I think that's right. And once we do get the bike plan passed, the next big step is obviously pushing for implementation and making sure that we're picking good projects to really show Anchorage and show everyone in Alaska that this can work and this will work. And that will be that will take work for on the munis end and for bicyclists to come together and find projects that really make the most sense to start moving bicycles around in a convenient and safe manner.
David Levy of Alaska Mobility Coalition, did you want to chime in on this issue of where does the money come from for infrastructure investment?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. One of the things I wanted to point out is that there has been a lot of talk in Juneau about this issue as well, and Representative Wilson from Southeast and her House Transportation Committee have looked at funding issues, and they have a proposal out there to look at funding transportation statewide and not just road repair and maintenance, but looking at funding public transportation and urban and rural improvements and bike lanes. And Alaska is kind of unique in terms of that can't really dedicate tax revenues for projects, but the Transportation Committee is looking at a kind of a unique way to do that and kind of forward fund some of this stuff and bring some ideas before the voters and bring it before the legislature. And we're about halfway through the session, and I'm not sure how far it's going to go this year, but I think there are some innovative ideas coming out of the state capitol, and I would encourage people to talk to the legislators about this.
And this one from Adam who writes by internet to talk@aprn.org from Homer, says, I ride my bike to work year-round in Homer. As far as biking in the winter, every bike comes with a built-in heater. You just start pushing those pedals and you heat up. That's true. He says the real issue is not a transportation but a housing issue. If you remember all those bikes on the road in China, at that time, the average person in Chinese cities worked within 3 miles of where they and lived within 3 miles of where they worked. Even today, Copenhagen, where lots of people bike, the average person lives near where they work. I live 3 miles from my office. The average person in my office lives 10 or 20 miles away. To ride a bike, they would have to give up their pony and their chickens. Well, there may be a number who really want to do that, Brian Lippmann's.
Well, I think it's a good point that, you know, people should be thinking about where they're going to live and the consequences on the transportation side. And so for a place like Homer, you know, some people may be spread out, but they could also leave their bike downtown, drive into town, get on their bike and go around town, and then drive the 20 miles back home.
Oh, and now we're getting to this issue of secure lockups for bicycles.
Well, if I can just add one more point, 50% of all trips are 3 miles or less, which is an easy bike distance. So if we think on a broader scale about how we're reducing our trips, not just getting to work, but all of our trips to the market, to the store, to the restaurant, 50% of those trips are short. A quarter, 25%, are 1 mile or less. So we're talking about short distances, and bicycling or walking are an easy solution to resolving a lot of these transportation problems, whether it's congestion or air quality, as well as transit.
Does the bicycle plan take any kind of look to the issue of safe places to lock your bike up, which can be a really sore point with bike commuters in Anchorage, as you know, especially once the weather gets warm and we get into bicycle theft season? Seems like they just go around with bolt cutters and cherry pick.
Right. It's obviously, if you don't have a place to safely park your bike, you're not going to bike to work. So the bike plan discusses providing safe storage, and that may be a bike cage, like a locked bike cage, or bike lockers, something that provides a little bit more security. I think in the interim, while we're waiting for more options to secure our bikes, just a good lock really can make all the difference. The cable locks are easily cut, and you can lose your bike pretty easily if you use those.
So you like the big fat kryptonite with the one they can't quite get that has the collar on it?
Yeah, they tend to, if you go for a good lock, you're much less likely to come back to your bike at the end of the day and not find it there.
All right. We're talking transportation and quality of life on Talk of Alaska. The phone number 1-800-478-8255. Let's go to Lace in Kasiloff. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi. I was on icebreakers out of the East Coast in the early 70s, and we stopped many times in Iceland, twice in Norway, and once in Copenhagen, Denmark. And a number of us had our bikes aboard, and the first thing that happens when you pull into a foreign port on a military vessel is the American embassy guy comes aboard and tells you the rules. And the rule of Denmark is that a drunk driver, first time caught, is 1 year in jail and 3 years revocation of their license. And the first time penalty for a drunk bicycle rider in Denmark is 1 year in jail and 3 years revocation of your license.
Boy, you know, this is the most stunning thing about the whole bicycle plan to me, is that when they analyze alcohol-involved vehicle-bicycle collisions, they discover 80% of the time, 80% of the time, it's the bicyclist that's drunk.
Somehow that fails to surprise me, because when I read any police report in this state, Ketchikan, Juneau, Anchorage, or here on the Kenai Peninsula, three-quarters of that column of that is a drunk driver, a revoked license for drunk driving, a suspended license for drunk driving.
Whoa.
The Ketchikan's got a bike path to the south of town, and they've got an extra-wide shoulder to the north of town. But I had to stop commuting by bike in the city of Ketchikan, because the danger there is insane with Tongass Avenue, just absolutely insane. If you don't get run down by a car that doesn't pay any attention to bicycles, some guy opens his door on the driver's side, parked car, you know, 5 feet in front of you when you're doing 25 miles an hour. I'm amazed more doors aren't lost to cars in that town. But anyway, the Seattle buses, certain routes, the buses have a bike rack on the front.
Yeah, and Anchorage
has. I
can't
remember. I think they can only take two or four bicycles or something like
that.
But
yeah.
Boy, is that a boon in Seattle.
Yeah, and Seattle also is a. Isn't this right, Brian, that Seattle is one of the heaviest bicycle use communities, even with all its hills?
It is a heavy use, but the cities with the highest use are Portland and then Minneapolis.
Yeah.
The DOT was holding a public hearing down here in the Kasiloff area, and I think they made it pretty clear to us. They haven't even got money to tar the cracks in the road. They're not going to pay any attention to bicycles, bicycle paths. And one of the excuses is, oh, well, the ATVers will use it, and that's illegal. I'm sorry, I don't buy it. Take a look at any news picture on TV of Paris in the middle of rush hour, and you'll see tens of thousands of bicycles coexisting with cars. Most of Europe coexist with bicycles and cars. I'm just finding it absolutely boggling that we can't.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Program.
It's Talk of Alaska Transportation and the Quality of Life is the subject. And, wow, we had tons. But I think, okay, let's just go ahead and go to John in Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, John. Hello, John. You there? Did we lose John? Maybe we want to go to Jean then, huh? Jean in Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you. I'm here.
All right.
I just want to say that I'm a surveyor and that the railroad, in their defense, has been studying various aspects of commuting to the valley for many years. One of the things they're finding is that people don't work 9 to 5 anymore. And when all of the great cities built their transportation systems, stores closed at 6 o'clock in the evening. They were closed on Sundays. And people work, generally speaking, the same hours in offices and stuff. And boy, that's just not true anymore. It makes trying to figure out commutes very difficult. Because even in a store, for instance, the shifts may start. There may be a shift that starts when it first opens, and then one an hour later, and an hour later, so that there's the maximum number of people in the middle of the day, and so that the lunch hours aren't all the same. And all of those things make transportation difficult, but it doesn't affect bicycles at all.
Great point, Jean. Yeah, thank you. David, do you want to chime in on that one, David Levy? It seems like she's got a real point. It's not like you quite have the peak drive time you might once have had.
Well, and I think that's the uniqueness about the transportation between the Valley and Anchorage. Right now there are many different modes of getting people. There's a very successful van pull program that commutes people. People commute from the Valley into Anchorage to Fort Rich and to Elmendorf and to other federal installations in Anchorage and to the university and whatnot. And there are carpool programs. There is a bus service operating between the Valley and Anchorage. So there are lots of different transportation modes that meet the different hours that people need and work.
Yeah. But it does seem that the pulses aren't what they once were. Yeah.
No, I think we have a changing workforce, and I think your caller is correct. And right now we're trying to set up transportation systems that meet that as well.
Well, we're talking about transportation and quality of life, and we got tons of calls as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from the Association of Alaska School Boards. Their Helping Kids Succeed Fund provides support for youth leadership opportunities, digital learning, and education scholarships. Information at aasb.org.
We're talking about transportation. We're getting calls from Southeast, and we haven't even brought up skiffs. I can't believe it. I mean, what is transportation in Southeast without skiffs? Carl in Homer chimes in and says, could we build sailing, hybrid, electric, science vessels that tie our coastal communities and schools together in Alaska? I have high hopes that Alaska will become a leader in maritime studies. Way to go, Carl. Let's go also to Wes from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Wes.
Hey, good morning.
How are you?
Great show today.
Thank you.
Fine, thanks.
Thank you.
Down in Homer, we've discussed for some time now getting a community-wide shuttle bus system going from Far East End Road up by McNeil, and simultaneously having a bus connecting from somewhere in Anchor Point and coming into Homer and circling around the city and going down to the Spit, where in the summertime the traffic congestion down there is really quite a problem. And we've had various meetings with the city assembly or economic development planning commission. And also we have a Grange formed, which is a nationwide grassroots organization that works with communities and farms and ranches and such. But we're getting a lot of support. And also a previous caller mentioned that their legislature and a few other people working on state and government programs for support of transportation.
Yes.
And in Homer, that would be a really good thing. And like in Anchorage, another caller mentioned, they have bicycle racks in front of their buses.
Yeah.
And we have a couple people in town here. They have a bus company, which are willing to work with us on that. And so if we get more voter support out there to call up their legislatures and say, yes, let's get this shuttle bus system going. Let's get the more eco-friendly transportation systems, like better bike routes and even converting the buses from diesel and gas to hydroelectric electric power and also biodiesel.
It sounds like you're almost to the point where, you know, like a gypsy van, it might not be legal, but a gypsy van could probably make a pretty decent living shuttling back and forth between those destinations. David Levy, what counsel do you have for Wes and Homer here of trying to get this regional shuttle going?
Well, Wes, thanks for the call. It's a good question and a good comment. Right now on the Kenai Peninsula, they're doing a community-wide study of the transportation needs in the area. And they're looking at Seward and Homer and Kenai and the rest of the area. So I'd encourage folks to either contact CARTS, which is Central Area Rural Transit, which is based out of Kenai, or the group they're working with, which is Brooks & Associates, to help put together a plan. They're hoping to have a plan by the end of May. That they can present to the community. But there's been a lot of interest in Homer for a long time about bringing a van or a bus system to the area, and I think it would be perfect for it.
Oh, it would, yeah, indeed, especially with the price of fuel and cost of insurance, and then some people can't afford to drive and some people shouldn't drive, and, of course, the students that are, you know, having to bother mom and dad to get a ride to and from, and some of us live quite a distance from town.
Yeah.
And to get a community-wide shuttle bus system would be perfect. I've already talked to a lot of people about it, and they're all for it, but trying to get people to come out to meetings and to vote, that's another issue right there.
Yeah. Well, Wes, it's
even
a pleasure.
Even to call up their representatives and rattle their cage.
Wes, I think this might be the first time you've ever called Talk of Alaska.
I think it's been a while. I forget when the last time it was, but it's been quite a while.
Oh, it's a pleasure to hear from you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, yeah.
All right. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about transportation and the quality of life. And let's see. Let's go to Brian Lippmans of Bicycle Commuters of Anchorage. I'm going to give you Rod's input by internet here. Does the plan include an outreach measure to educate drivers in Anchorage that bicycles are legally allowed to ride in the streets as long as they stay as far right as possible? I have commuted by bike in many cities in America, and by far Anchorage is the most dangerous and hostile place I've ever ridden. Hardly a ride goes by without at least one driver screaming at me that I belong on the sidewalk or pathway.
Well, no doubt that there is that education is needed both for motorists and bicyclists, and the plan does include a series of action items on the education front. Some of those are focusing on DMV over at the DMV to include issues with respect to sharing the road and how bicycles are allowed to be on the road, including those in DMV manuals and testing, having exams that include questions with respect to how to safely share the road.
You guys have really thought this thing through.
Well, this Bicycle Commuters of Anchorage supports the plan, but we didn't draft it. This was all from the folks over at the Muni that put this together.
Wow. Great job. I think they used a consultant, didn't they? I seem to remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They did.
Wow. I got so many different directions to go here, but I have to take this one up. What about all those ice chunks that get thrown onto the adjacent bike path when the plows go by at a high rate of speed, which they seem to really enjoy doing? You know what I mean? I mean, you get these, after years and years of pressure, they finally have these little plows that'll actually go along and clear the sidewalks for the pedestrians and clear the bike paths for the bicycles in a decent length of time. And then along comes another one of those graders and just plop, and they flop all these ice chunks right up onto the bike path. I mean, what's up with that? What can we do about that? Is there anything in the? I mean, I don't understand why that happens in the first place, to tell you the truth. But second off, is there anything in the bike plan about it?
I don't know if there's specific recommendations other than encouraging the maintenance folks to synchronize the clearing of roads and multi-use paths so you don't have that problem.
Yeah. Okay. Best we can do, I guess. Let's go to Eddie and Palmer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Eddie.
Hey, thanks.
How are you?
I just wanted to call in and say my wife and I lived in Lazy Mountain just outside of Palmer, and we were only about 5 miles from where I work and where she works down in town. But recently we just bought a house in downtown, and I live less than a mile from work now, and I've been biking home from work, and it's, I mean, I leave work with a smile. I get home in less than 5 minutes. I can listen to music, ride through parks, and it's just great. And it really, I think it's a really great way of life. I mean, still a rural town. There's not nearly as many people, obviously, as Anchorage, but I think it's just a great way to live. And, you know, you don't have to plan out where you go in an order. You kind of just can figure it out and get there faster on a bicycle in Palmer. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I wanted to call in and say.
Great. You actually mentioned quality of life. And this one from Lauren. This is a very thoughtful one. Lauren, I'm for biking. Do it myself at times for transportation. But the debate regarding their inclusion as a transportation option and the need to include planning for that use seems to be tagged with a righteous attitude that health is the key definer that trumps any counter debate. Can't the argument that we should plan for bike transportation stand alone without the righteous position that I'm saving the world when I ride my bike and you're less of a person for driving a car? By leaning too heavily on health as the issue puts the debate undeniably in favor of bikers, does that become more of an accusation of good versus bad citizen rather than a simple request for inclusion as an equal transportation option? I like that one. Cooler heads prevailing. Brian, do you feel holier than thou? I guess it's pretty easy to get trapped into that.
I certainly don't. I think it's a good point. And I think, you know, I think a statement from the mayor of Fort Worth was, and mayor of Salt Lake just recently at a convention, were discussing livability and talking about the importance of bicycle transportation, not for health reasons or environmental reasons, but really because they have transportation issues, and if they want to address those issues and create a livable city that is sustainable, they need to find ways to move people around. And you can't do that simply by widening roads and just purely accommodating the car and nothing else. And so if we're really serious about trying to address some of these transportation issues, we really need to think multimodally. We need to think about mass transit, bicycles, pets, and cars, how we're going to move people around, not just one mode or another.
All right. Thank you very much, Brian Lippmans, Bicycle Commuters of Anchorage. David Levy, what do you say when they say, there's nobody on those buses, why should we have more of them?
Well, we have, our story is there are 7 million rides a year, and each one has a story.
All right. Thank you very much, Dave Waldron, Lynn Anderson, BD Trantina, Lori Townsend. I'm Steve Feimel. Bye.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, providing financial tools and resources for purchasing a home or planning for the future. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.